Okay, boys and girls, Fish and Frank here in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me. Just, we were sitting here putting up the tarpon maps, and I said, oh, with that, grab your headphones, let's see what we can do. So, we'll see what goes on.
Nothing like an impromptu moment.
Yeah, we've been pondering about a couple of things. One of the things that I thought of this week was, why don't catfish live on reefs?
I don't know.
You know,
it's very strange.
You go out into the harbor, you go out to the deep holes, which is basically just kind of flat bottom. There's no feature there or anything. And there's tons of catfish.
Right.
But you go on the reef where you've got all that structure, all the bait, all the other stuff that lives in a reef, and seldom, if ever, do you catch catfish.
Yeah, it's pretty strange.
And even when you go out into the Gulf, reef fishing, you almost never catch catfish out there.
Nope.
But closer you get to the beach, just open sand, you're very likely to catch catfish.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense.
I'm not sure why they wouldn't want to be on structure.
Right.
But now, flounder don't go for structure either.
No, but they like the perimeters of the structure because of the washboard bottom that it creates.
Right. I don't know, just some kind of weird, every once in a while you're sitting there, you're going, really? I wonder why that is.
Yeah.
And it's, we've been doing a bunch of tarpon fishing. We went out with Captain Danny Latham, freelining crabs. I put up a screenshot on the Boca Grande Pass page of all the tarpon you could see with his side scan.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
You know, he's saying, oh, we're okay, drop the lines, we're on the fish, okay, we got fish here. And I'm thinking, well, you know, and I wasn't looking. And I remember the first time I went into Boca Grande Pass tarpon fishing, we didn't even have a depth finder. We just drifted through the pass. There was right. No fish finder, depth finder in the boat. And the first one I was ever saw while I was out there was one of those spinner flasher jobs. And you could literally hear it spinning inside, and it would light up as where the bottom was, and then you'd get another little color mark above that if it thought there was fish there. And the spinners, and then to the ones would show you the little, you know, fish pictures on it saying, okay, there was fish there. And the funniest part about it is we were all thinking it actually was showing fish, and then we found out it wasn't showing fish, it was showing the air bladders or swim bladders in the fish, because the radar or the sonar
yeah,
travels through wood, it travels through air, or wood, water, fiberglass, but it doesn't travel through air. So when it hits air, it pings back up, and it would say, okay, well, there's the bottom, all right, there's something, there's an air pocket there. And I always thought it'd be really fun to take a whole bunch of ping pong balls on fishing line and glue them to weights and just drop them around the harbor to see how many people would just, oh my God, look at all the fish there, and stop, because, you know, all the little air bladders would show up as big as tarpon.
Right.
They would, you know, just one of those things I always thought. I was just too lazy to go and glue fishing line and weights to, you know, like 200 ping pong balls. You know, I just thought if I did that right outside of the reef, you know, people coming in, all of a sudden their depth finder lights up with all these fish, you know, from a foot off the bottom to 3 or 4 feet.
That would have been
funny to, you know, but you would have had to go out and buy a video camera then. You just couldn't do it with your phone, you know.
Right.
But I just thought that would be interesting entertainment, that the fish finders were actually looking for the swim bladders.
Right.
And now you literally see an image of a tarpon, and sometimes you can actually get an image of a fish or a wreck, or it's literally almost pictures underwater.
Yeah. I mean, some of the detail on that stuff is, I mean, it's a complete game changer as far as how technology has advanced.
No fair fishing.
No. No, not at all.
And now the Navy's been using that kind of technology to literally map the floors of the ocean. So for the first time in human history, we're actually learning a little bit about, soon we will know as much about the oceans as we do about the moon.
Right.
Because right now we don't know as much about the oceans as we do the moon.
No,
we know
it's
more
pretty
about
sad.
The moon. Yeah.
The only planet that's habitable and we don't know anything about it.
Yeah, 70% of it. I don't know. I ain't got a clue.
Right.
You know. And I like historians.
Let's figure out a place where we can't live and understand all of that. But a place that sustains our life. I mean, what? 75% of the Earth's
70 or 75, yeah.
Oxygen comes from the ocean.
Oh, yeah. Almost all the oxygen comes out of the ocean.
You know, all the plankton out there creates oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yet we don't... We're
that's where they figure it came from originally.
Destroying it at an alarming rate and don't know anything about it.
No, well, I'm not even getting into ruining or non-ruining. I'm just saying, you know, it's just funny we don't know anything. Yeah. In the 70s, they were going to build all these towns underneath the water.
Right.
In the 60s and 70s, they had visions of underwater cities and all that, which is actually way smarter than trying to build bubble domes above, you know, on land.
Mm-hmm.
They want to do all these dome cities on land. They would actually work out much better underwater.
Yeah.
But, you know, the whole 70s thing, they kind of gave up on it because it was more money.
Right.
So, just a lot of crazy stuff, thinking about what we know of and don't know of. Tarpon, when, you know, trends happen. For years, people used rubber core sinkers fishing for tarpon.
Right.
Now, Boca Grande Pass goes through and undergoes changes in how people fish, what their attitude is like, what the tarpon are like. And one of the big game changers in the last few years was Boca Grande Pass is no longer a shipping channel. So they don't dredge the shipping lane through there.
Right.
From 1911 through 2001, it was a shipping lane. So they would dredge it. And it kept it the same year after year, minor changes, a year after year after year. And I can remember talking to captains say, it's the deepest undredged channel in Florida.
Natural pass in
Natural pass, and it's always the same. And I'm like, you never notice that great big red thing out there with the blowers on it and the dredgers?
Right.
Do you think that sandbar straight out the pass on the north side was just there naturally?
Right.
And, well, yeah, it's all natural. Yeah, okay.
You were obviously never there when those tankers came in to the fuel docks.
The dredging barges that showed up every 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, and just kept it all smooth and dredged. Now that it's filling in and widening out and narrowing down and getting deeper and shallower, and people say, well, the hole is still the same deep. Of course, when you look at Captiva Pass, Little Gasparilla Pass, Boca Grande Pass, almost all of them have the same thing. You get a large volume of water trying to get out of that pass, and as it hits the shallower water outside there, it tends to swirl there and creates a digging motion to the water. And that just kind of digs a hole there and keeps that hole cleared out while depositing that sand outside in the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
So in 1919, when you got through the deep hole in Boca Grande Pass, it was about 12 to 13 feet deep outside of that.
Right.
That was all the water you had out there. Then they started dredging it so they'd get the ships through it. They were trying to get phosphate out of here, cattle, all kinds of stuff they were shipping in and out. The railroads all came to Boca Grande. And so it became a shipping port. Well, they had to keep that 40 feet deep to get the boats in and out.
Right.
Low tide had to be 40 feet of water. So we got used to that, but now it's starting to fill in. And my guess is it's going to end up looking a lot like Captiva Pass, where you have a lot of water in the pass itself. Then it's going to go up and get shallower, and you'll have a big bar start building up on the north side and a sandbar running towards the south. As the water from going in and out of the pass tries to get in and out, flowing out, and then you have the current coming from the north, it's going to wash up a little wall there and build up a long wall going to the south. So I could see in the next 10 to 15 years where you won't really be able to drive straight out of Boca Grande Pass with a big boat. You're going to have to go out, turn to the south to avoid the bar. Now, that's not happening now, but I'm saying over the next 10 or 15 years.
Oh, definitely. You'll definitely see where they'll end up trying to construct some kind of jetty and whatever else to try to help keep it from filling in, and they'll screw it up.
Yeah, it'll just make it worse.
Yeah, I mean, they usually do.
Yeah, so it's just kind of interesting to see all that stuff that goes on out there and what's happening.
Even Gasparilla Pass is getting hard to get through.
Gasparilla Pass will end up filling in.
Yeah.
It'll end up not being a pass anymore because there's not enough current flow through there to wash a channel in the sandbar.
Right.
it's not quite enough. Where Boca won't ever not be a pass. It would take a major hurricane to block that off.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. I think the water would eventually just dig it back through.
Yeah, it wouldn't be surprising. It's kind of like the lake over there on Cayo Costa. Keeps opening, closing, opening, closing.
I was just looking for that. Okay, where to? There I am. Boca Pass.
Because it's back open again, somebody was telling me the other day.
The lake is?
Yeah.
I haven't looked recently. I was trying to see. I have pictures on it. I think they're all on the thing, but I don't have them arranged on the Boca Grande Pass one. There used to be islands on the outside of Cayo Costa. There was three or four islands out there. They went away, and then in the 1980s, the Johnson Shoals started filling in, and by the 90s, you couldn't get back to the lake again. And then the mouth of that lake moved south, all the way down to the end of the lake, where it was just kind of a rivulet going in and out. But originally, it was just a bay there. And then the bay closed in and the north end was open. You could drive your boats in and swim and fish in a lake and drive your boats out. Right. Well, then that closed in and then it reopened a little further south and a little further south and a little further south. It's just kind of funny how all those changes happened over the few years. In 1999, the opening was about halfway down the lake. And I was looking to see if I had dates on some of these. 95, the opening was still at the north end, still with a bay, small island out, sandbar out front of it. It's just kind of cool to go back. But it was the 90s when all that changed. It was the late 80s when the islands disappeared.
What caused that?
I don't know what caused it. I don't remember a big storm, maybe the no-name storm or one of those in the 80s right. knocked those islands down.
Yeah.
And because they were good-sized islands, they show up on all the charts, the older charts, and you can tell if a chart is actually a new chart or not when you look outside of Cayo Costa. Does it still show the islands there?
Updated 1983.
Yeah. So I was looking to see if I had if I had any of these dated. 1950, with big U-shaped island there and no lake on Cayo Costa. In 1950, but it was a big outer sandbar island, pretty little island. So anyway, getting back into some other stuff, just kind of weird how you find all these things in history and people say, well, this is the way it is, this is the way it's been. No, it's just, what time frame are you looking at? It's just like the whole debate we've been having with the redfish. You got to close the seasons, you got to quit the tournaments, you got to do all that. And I remember prior to 2007, most fishing tournaments had anywhere from 70 to 150 boats in them.
Oh, yeah. A lot.
And now if you got 70 boats, it's a big tournament.
Yeah.
And there used to be 2 to 4 tournaments every weekend, I would say from, what, April through November?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a good safe number.
But 2 to 3 times as many tournaments, maybe 4 times as many tournaments, with more than double the anglers in all of the tournaments, and we still had a lot of redfish.
Right.
But the last few years of red tide in the October and November months have just depleted our stock of redfish down to almost nothing.
Yeah. No, I'll agree with that. You know, and it's never just one thing. It's usually several things. Very seldom can you point your finger at just one.
Well, obviously, if nobody was fishing, there'd be more fish.
Well, yeah,
and
absolutely.
If there was no tournaments, there would be more fish. If there was no pollution, there would be more fish. If there was none of this or none of that. But you can't take the... each one of those is percentages.
Right.
The biggest percent, 50%, 75% of the reason we don't have a lot of redfish right now is simply red tides.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, red tide plays a huge role in it because it was 2 or 3 years back-to-back.
Yeah.
That those breeders got wiped out.
And it's when the red tide hits. If it would have hit in the springtime, it would not have done
a
tenth of the damage it hit.
Not even
it
close.
It would have been 10, 20% of the problem. But when it hits, right as the eggs are hatching, right as the eggs are coming out, and there'd be little tiny fry redfish, a little microscopic redfish has no chance in a field of red tide. They die instantly.
Right.
And millions upon millions of redfish died. And nobody ever saw them, so they just look at the big ones. Oh, that big one died. That big one died. Well, those aren't the important ones. It was the 5,000 babies they just had that all died. Those are the ones that aren't here now.
Yeah, exactly.
So, good news about fishing. All right, let's. That was kind of the funky news report. So, all right, I think I'm gonna call it an end to that, and then we're gonna do all uplifting stuff on the next one.
Okay.
We're gonna come back in just a moment and do uplifting, happy fishing stuff about how good and where good the fishing is, because I just did enough doom and gloom to last me a week. So I want to do something happier. So we're going to end this one and come back on a happy note. Bye, boys and girls. We'll see you in a couple minutes.